CIA, motherfucker.
Wise man say, forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza. Cause you're a freak with a microphone.
I am an FBI agent.
You're listening to the Super Podcast, featuring hosts Super Marcy.
And I think everybody these days can relate to Serial Mom.
And Pete the Terrible Aussie.
But one of my pet peeves in movies, like people sitting down to have dinner and they don't actually finish the dinner.
This podcast contains coarse language.
See, watching this, like, I just want to go and...
Adult themes.
But, like, the whole, this whole movie is just hinges on someone's ass.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Visit supermarcy.com for more information. Now for our feature presentation.
Listen, sister, if I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you.
By the way, his testicle retrieval operation went quite well.
White Russian. No ice. Hold the vodka. Hold the Kahlua.
Isn't this 4215 pussy way?
Hey everyone, this is B Jermaine, and welcome to the long-awaited new episode of the Super Podcast. So this is the special interview episodes of the show. Unfortunately, my regular co-host, Super Marcy, wasn't able to make it today, but don't worry, she is here with us in spirit. And I know she would have loved to have been here because we have a very exciting episode for you all today. And I am joined by two very awesome guests who are joining me to talk about their film today. One of them happens to have been on this show quite a few times in the past, and he's making his long-awaited return to the show. And they're here to talk about their film, the crime thriller Medias Res. And that, of course, are the film's co-writer, producer, and star, Delaney, and the film's co-writer and director, Edward Fernando Gonzalez. Hello, Delaney and Edward, and welcome to the show. Or in this case, Delaney, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
That always a pleasure to be. We were just talking before we started recording. It's awesome. I've known of you for a long time, and I'm really excited to be on the show. And Delaney told me a lot about you and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, well, I'm blushing right now because I know Delaney loves to talk up us Aussies up all the time. And we love to talk about him a lot as well, so I appreciate that, of course. But I am excited that you guys are both here to talk about the film Medias Res, which is a film that I have known for quite a while now, because even though the film is now out and about on a lot of streaming services everywhere all over the world and including Australia, I know you guys have been working on this film for quite a while, because I remember seeing an early version of this film all the way back in 2019, I believe. That's right. So a very early version of it. But how does it, I guess my first question for you both is, how does it feel to, like, obviously you guys have been tinkering on the film since then, how does it feel to finally release the full final version of the film out there in the world?
You know what, like, so we, that's a good question. So we released our initial edits in 2019, and then last year we decided, just I talked to Delaney and we decided to do like the ultimate director's cut, so to speak. So we actually cut out, I believe, almost 13 minutes of footage, and we had a lot of sound issues that we finally remedied. So this is like now the version that we're both happy with, and it feels really surreal, it, kind of putting it out there in the world again. We had a very limited release the first time, on mostly on Amazon Prime. We did some screenings actually beforehand. But now this is the final version. This is the one that we're like really happy with in that sense. It's a little bit more, the sound issues have been remedied. The cut is tighter. I think kind of like the narrative, it plays out a bit better, since it's a little bit more of a, we did restructure it somewhat from the original cut that we had. So is kind of surreal now that it's 2026 and now we have the director's cut kind of coming in all these platforms now. So it's exciting. It's weird still. What do you think, Delaney? How do you feel about it?
When the cut came out in 2019, I believe that was like a 95-minute cut. it was received like pretty well. Like the reviews are still out there. They're still good. They were encouraging at the time. But Edwin and I really wanted to go back in there and take the time to do a lot of, and when I say we go back in there, that means Edwin going back in there, but going back in there and really doing the work around some of the sound issues that we were having, some of the pacing issues. We like writing the script. We wrote the script we wanted to film and we filmed the whole script, but we really didn't find the life of this movie until we kept kind of taking certain things that, like finding the pace, finding the exact tone of it. It's been something I've played around with in my head ever since we've released it. We all needed some refractory period to kind of reset and whatnot, especially after the pandemic years. But since then, yeah, it was pretty much about a year and a half ago, Edwin and I started talking again seriously about, yo, what can we do with Medias Res? Because we both think it's pretty good. And it wasn't on Prime anymore at that time. We had taken it down. But we wanted to come back out and come out stronger. We wanted to make a stronger director's cut, new color grading, new sound, enhanced music, scenes that we didn't use in the other cut. Like we found a rhythm to it. And Edwin, yeah, spent the last year and a half just cutting and cutting, not cutting away or not cutting to subtract, but just finding where everything goes. And yeah, at the end of the day, we came up with this tight 83-minute cut that really plays. And the kind of fun thing I joke around with Edwin about is like, yo, you're like John Cassavetes. You're the only director who takes a director's cut and makes it shorter. So I think that takes a lot of cojones, man.
I know. That is because usually with director's cut, I mean, some of my favorite director's cuts are like the stuff that Francis Ford Coppola did, or like, you know, some other, it's usually significantly longer. No, this is shorter this time. Unlike, you know, so it is kind of like we took the Cassavetes routes on that one.
And also too, that was one of the things I sort of noticed right away, because the original version of the film, I still remember quite well. And I actually forgot that it was a few minutes longer. So, oh, wow. But even just like certain things, like in terms of the color grading and also the sound issues that you guys brought up, those were prevalent in that early version. But watching this film again, I did notice that you did fix all that stuff up. And yeah, I think this time around, I mean, I really enjoyed the film the first time I watched it, but I think this new cut of the film definitely is an improvement in some areas of the film, but also it's definitely more tighter paces. So I definitely commend you guys on doing a different version of this film that still is just as compelling in this form as it was in the original cut.
Yeah, I'm glad it played for you, Vita, because I was a little bit nervous in that sense because the movie... I don't know. What do you think, Delania? We discussed the pacing and I liked it had a little bit of a slower pacing, especially in the midpoint. But it just kind of, for this version, it felt maybe we wanted to go a little bit more, just a tighter. I don't know if it's kind of not making it more thriller-esque than art house. Because the movie originally, I think kind of like when we first made it, it felt more like an art house movie. And then with this cut, we lean more into the genre aspect of it, really kind of pushing it a little bit more into the thriller aspect. And yeah, I think it plays, I prefer this cut. This is my favorite cut. I think with some of the other films that we'll do, they're going to be more straight up genre. And some of them are going to be a little bit more kind of like we did with that original cut of Medias Res, which is a little bit more like, no, this is a little bit more kind of art house. It's a little bit more, it's not all about kind of like the pacing, and it's a little bit more about getting lost in the world, so to speak. So, but yeah, I like I said, this is the version that I prefer, and I'm glad it played for you, Bede.
Well, I guess to start off, because for the audience of the show out there, even though we have talked about a lot about the newer cut of this film, I'm kind of curious, though, where did the idea of medias res come from? Like I said before, this is a project that had been years in the making. So I'm kind of curious, where did the idea of just for this film come from?
Oh, that's such a good question. Homie, do you want to chime in on this one first?
Because well,
I want to go back in the day when we started this, because it started off with a lot of conversations at late night diners in California. In for anybody that knows, in Australia, the near San Francisco is where we're based. And where did the original, I think the original idea, I had an original idea about a teen actress, a former teen actress that was found in the trunk of the car by a couple guys that were down on their luck. That was the initial kind of spark that I had. And then I talked to you about it, Delaney, and then we kind of start developing the story from there. But that was just the basic premise that I had. And then we just kind of ran with it. And I can't, it's been such a long time. I don't know, like the stuff with the, what's your recollection of it in that sense? And that'll.
Oh, well, certainly I remember you had started coming out to the Impact Theater where me and a bunch of the other actors were performing. We used to work there. We would do Shakespeare world premiere plays. You know, as a black box theater. And Edwin and I have known each other since 1997, so like 30 years.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Edwin and I have always made movies together, even when we weren't making movies. We had that teenage relationship where we're like, we're gonna make a movie like this, and we'd sit and we'd write and we'd shoot some of it, and then our ADHD would just have us move on to the next exciting project. And I mean, we did years of that. That was just like our film school. And around 2011 was when I was working as a stage actor and a company member at a theater in Berkeley. And Edwin had started coming out to the shows. And that was kind of, don't let me speak for you, Edwin, but it was kind of like your first induction into like the world of live theater. And I think
it was absolutely, yeah.
I think he was very enamored by it, particularly by many of the personalities that are attracted to working in those spaces. And he had like this idea about a teen actress or a former teen actress. Yeah. That's found in the trunk of a car by two guys. And then we just sort of reverse engineered it from there. We put in a lot. I mean, well, we didn't reverse engineer it from there. I will say there was a step in between where we did a dry run with a lot of these actors in the form of short films that we would do as hybrid productions at the theater. So we would like remake old movies and we would do it live / with filmed segments. And we did a couple of those and Edwin was like, fuck it. I think we could make a movie. He's like, yeah. I think I could just make a movie now, bro. And I was like, are you serious? We could just make a movie? He was like, yeah, bro, I could just fucking do it. You were like so confident. You were like, yeah, bro, we don't need a fucking crew. We don't need fucking anybody. You're like, I could shoot the shit out of this. I'm worried about sound, but that's it. Like, we'll just figure it out. And that was 2012, like the end of 2012.
2012, 13. And one thing that kind of made it with the narrative and the characters that came about, all the characters and or all the actors that we use for the film actually came from the theater company Delaney was working on. So it was easy. Like Joseph Mason, who plays Joe, was an actor in the theater company. Sarah Quickendall, who plays Summer Hayes, was also an actress in the theater company. And Stosh as well, who plays I'm forgetting
Stosh. Bro.
I mean, how can I forget Cy Bennington? But we had them all right there as actors.
Dave, this is my friend Cy.
That we had that we just started writing the parts around them and kind of like their capabilities of as actors. And that's how kind of like the narrative started forming. And then it went from there and it kind of mutated into, I think we were wanted to do something that was like a straight up kind of film noir. And then for some reason throughout the production and from the writing and the shooting, it kind of started mutating into something that was not so much like a straight up kind of film noir. In that sense, it became something a little bit different. a little bit more kind of genre-esque, but kind of art house-esque at the same time. I don't know. It was definitely a lot of, it was somewhat of a different film that kind of we ended up with in that sense, and in a different story in that regard. But that was kind of the genesis of it. It was just kind of, we had these actors, we had kind of like this basic idea. We did a several dry runs for Delaney's Theater. And then, yeah, that we just kind of went on forth and started filming and went from there.
Well, it's not that we had actors. It's that we had like a company, like you and
It
I
was a company. It was
and
absolutely a
Sarah
company.
and like me in particular, like spent a lot of time with that like theater and stuff. And that's when Sarah steps up too and sort of becomes more of a producer on the set. And she was amazing. So she's like our third. She's like our third. She's a big punk rock star now. So unfortunately, we couldn't get Sarah
Exactly,
here
she
today.
is. Yeah, if yeah, if you're
But
if,
she's,
if yeah.
yeah. She's, she, Sarah Quaikendall has gone on to become like one of the premier, to be in one of the premier punk bands in the Bay Area, the Creepy Crawlies. They're an amazing outfit. But back in the day, no, she was like full-time theater film. And yeah, she really stepped up and helped us produce the shit out of it while we were making it.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things too, like knowing that yous are all part of the same theater company and all that. But I was already familiar with all of you through the podcast you hosted at the time, Delaney Splat
Oh
House, because you all were pretty much all hosts on
Oh
that show.
yeah.
Head on.
Sarah, yeah. Sarah and Joe was on that show a couple times too.
And also another certain someone every now and again on that. On this show, on this episode, but that's beside the point.
Oh yeah. No, you were there too, my brother. You were there too. No, we were international, man. But
We
you, but
were.
hold on. No, but I looked up to you at that time. Like, cause you've been doing this game since like 2009, 2010, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
Yeah,
yeah, like
I'm an
your
OG
podcast is a
podcaster.
teenager.
No, indeed, like
Yeah.
that's how I found out about you. Delaney played me some of your podcasts and your podcast appearances. So that's why, yeah, I've known about you for this crazy for years. And this is the first time we've ever actually talked. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing the podcasting game, yeah, since 2009 when Marcy brought me on this very show. And the fact
Yeah.
that, yeah, it's 2017 years I've been doing podcasting and I'm still doing it and have multiple different shows, not just here on the Super Network, but also my own solo stuff as well. Like, it has been quite an interesting ride in terms of being a very, I guess, prolific film critic slash podcaster. And yeah, I mean, but also too, like with making the odd appearance here and there on Splat House back in the day, was it also opened me up to an all new audience and getting to do some really fun and entertaining stuff that was outside of the stuff I was doing at the time. And also bringing more of an audience over to my work as well. So I do appreciate that, Delaney, for sure.
Did it work that way? People came over to
I would like to imagine they did.
you? I'm
Yeah.
sure they did. I'm sure they did.
Yes. So, but yeah, I mean, that's how it's sort of, again, going back to what I was saying before, like how pretty much it this whole while I was watching the film the first time, I was already familiar with everyone, like Sarah and Joseph. And I know quite a few of the others also appear in the film as well, in either more larger supporting roles and bit parts. So it was really fun kind of sitting there watching the film. And like, even though it's not a full-blown Splat House production, it's like, okay, it's the same crew who are working on this
Yeah.
film. So that made it a fun watch for me.
Oh yeah, it was like the Splat House kids working with A24, and that's
Kind
what
of
Fed
felt
went with.
that way. That's actually good. Yeah, that's actually a good comparison.
I was going to say, like, now that you sort of had the idea of doing medias res, how long did it take to kind of bring the film together to start shooting in terms of pre-production and then eventually going into production itself?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we started, essentially, we did a GoFundMe. We got a little bit of initial seed money, and I think once we had kind of like a really solid draft, we actually just started shooting scenes, and we started breaking it down by what can we shoot where it's just bare minimum crew and actors. And we started shooting a lot of the film with just Delaney and Joe. And it was a lot of there's a lot of driving scenes that we started shooting. And essentially, as we were kind of working in pre-production, getting the rest of the cast and finding locations and all that stuff, we just started kind of getting these little scenes, these little shots. And a lot of it was just with Joe and Delaney. And then that kind of it started informing how the rest of the process and how we started then tackling a lot of the other scenes that were a little bit more complex. So it was kind of piecemeal, kind of just one scene at a time as we were kind of getting our confidence. And because, like I said, it was a micro budget. We didn't have a lot of resources, so we had to kind of make do with what we had available. And we kind of, unlike a traditional movie, we had to kind of learn on the spot how to make this type of film on under these kind of circumstances. But yeah, the production, as soon as we had, I think it took us maybe about 6 months to have like a solid draft. And then once we did, we just started kind of knocking off these little scenes and these little shots, and we kind of went from there.
Yeah, we would siphon off some of the world building stuff to shoot that independently to kind of get ourselves going. So like news footage, like interviewing members of the quintessential American TV show that Summer used to be on. Like Edwin said, all the driving shots. We shot like hundreds of hours of driving.
We shot a lot of driving. I mean, like one of the first things do you remember we were talking about it? Like we were just before we did this podcast a couple of days ago, we were talking about some of the memories of the early shoot, just kind of reminiscing. And do you want to tell Bede about that story? That one of our first shoots when we were driving in Oakland. For anybody in Australia that doesn't know Oakland, it's a wonderful city, but it has like a little bit of a rough part. Would that be fair to say,
I
Delaney?
mean, we were in East Oakland at like, and my memory is for this particular shoot, it was like earlier. It was like 9 in the
This is one
morning
of
or
our first
something.
shoots. Yeah, this is one of our first shoots. We decided to shoot early in the morning, and we were just going to get some basic shots of Delaney and Joe driving, and we were going to figure out a little bit later on where we're going to place it. And at one point we made, I think this is, yeah, our like maybe our second or third day of shooting, and we were just driving around, and you made a wrong turn. Do you remember?
Oh,
You went.
I made the right turn, my
I mean,
friend.
it
But
was
we
the right
were,
turn. Yeah.
yeah. But it took us down the wrong alley. But we had a rig on the car, a suction cup rig, where Edwin would put his like multi-$1,000 camera on these suction cups to the hood of the car, so it would shoot on to Joe and I, and then Edwin would be ducked down in the back seat. But this one particular day, yeah, I make a turn and we're going down this neighborhood in East Oakland. And I don't know what it was, but like the road just got narrower and narrower. And it was almost like cars were parked on either side of the street and my car could barely get like between them. And then there were I have a memory of more than one dog, but there were like at least
There
two
were, yeah.
dogs that were like almost physically like hitting the car, like touching the, 'cause we're just like going through their neighborhood. It doesn't look like cars usually are
Good
meant to
thing.
go straight through there so fast. But yeah, we definitely, it looked, I've never seen that particular footage, but
It was
in my
essentially they were
memory,
having a dog fight. They were having a dog fight. I mean,
yeah,
it
it was
looked like
like,
straight up.
yeah.
If you've ever seen the film Training Day, it felt a little bit like that, but the Northern California version of it, in that sense. It was really like it was really surreal. And that was kind of not afterwards, that was not the only kind of close call that we had throughout the making of the film after that. Let's just put it that way. But it was like a little bit of a trial by fire, and it kind of, and we were like, all right, this is, if we're going to be making this film in this kind of guerrilla method, we're going to be kind of dealing with certain situations that might be very similar to this. And it kind of laid kind of like just It kind of laid the foundation for kind of like our shooting, so to speak, those kind of early shoots. So they're still kind of pretty vivid in my mind.
And when it came to the technical aspects of the film, because Edwin, besides being the director of the film, you also were the editor and the cinematographer. One of the things I was struck by with the film on both its original cut and also, again, for the final cut, is just how visually beautiful the film looks. Can you talk a bit about the creating the specific visual style and lighting of the film? Because it does have that sort of noirish kind of feel to it, but it's also very colorful and atmospheric too.
Yeah, you know what? It's actually a lot of the inspiration was like from the old 1940s film noirs that were all shot in black and white, that kind of featured a lot of kind of sharp shadows, a lot of high contrast. I kind of just wanted to do a version of that, but with color. And in my mind, I was just like, well, how would that look if we were going to do a color version of it? And then I started kind of imagining very vivid, rich colors that were almost kind of lurid and had kind of like a weird tinge to it. It kind of reminded me, for anybody that is like a still photographer of like, who's listening, of like Kodak Ektachrome film that has like a very kind of weird kind of rich kind of like color palette to it that has like a grit, and that kind of like visual reference was kind of like informed how we shot the film. We used very purposely, we used a lot of natural light just to kind of keep it, which allowed us to move and not be and not get caught when we were filming, because we didn't permit the film. We shot completely guerrilla, so we had to kind of move it with a certain kind of lightness in that sense. But that was essentially kind of like the visual look came. It came from the script. It just felt that we needed something that was kind of raw, kind of almost somewhat like a stylized documentary that wasn't too polished, and also just the early influence of those film noirs, because I'm a huge fan of a lot of the cinematographers from the 1940s that shot those films. Kind of like, for anybody that knows, like a big one of my favorite cinematographers is actually a one that did exclusively film noir named John Alton. And I just wanted to do like the color version of what they did, essentially. And I kind of came up with this look working in the color grade of just kind of having very kind of lurid colors. The blacks aren't really black in certain scenes. It's kind of purposely grainy and noisy just to give it a little bit of a texture. So yeah, that's essentially how it kind of came about. Just gonna really pay somewhat of homage to those early films from back in the day, even though it's a color film.
And dear listeners, I one second, Bede, sorry, it's not for me to take over. I just want to tell your listeners that you are not blowing smoke up Edwin's ass and saying like, oh, your film looks beautiful. Like, it legitimately looks amazing. Like, say what you will about the story or the acting or whatever, but if you were to just put on medias res and put it on mute, it looks phenomenal.
I appreciate it. And yeah, if for anybody who sees it, it's the 4K version now. So hopefully you'll, I really think I kind of nailed the look that I had in my mind initially now versus the other cut. So I appreciate the words, Delaney, and be.
But also too, like, I have to ask this, being that this film is a neo-noir, was there any temptation to make another cut of the film that was graded into black and white just to see how it would look in that format?
Oh, big time. We wanted to go like, Delaney, I think I discussed it at one point. I don't know. I was so tempted to go George Miller, you know, how he did his cut of Fury Road, black and white. Oh, yeah. Yeah, just it is such a beautiful
black look. And chrome, black and chrome. Black We're and on chrome, an Australian podcast. Show some respect to George fucking Miller.
I'm so sorry. And I have mad respect for George Miller. I was telling Bede before we started recording, he's one of my favorite directors. So yeah, my apologies.
Yeah, he's our independent film godfather.
He is.
Although I think he prefers to be called Dr. George Miller.
He is a doctor. He is absolutely a doctor. He was an emergency room.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
But to answer your question, Bede, absolutely. Like, yeah, like we like just in doing the new cut, there was a in my mind, I was just kind of like, wouldn't be kind of cool if just to do the whole thing in black and white? And it actually kind of played because I lit it with such kind of high contrast. It would have worked in black and white. But yeah, We went back and kind of stayed with the color, but yeah, there was a huge temptation just to make this one a little bit more, yeah, just the full black and white version, maybe even more leaning into the film noir aspect from the 1940s, for sure.
And also, too, I think what makes the film very unique, especially of more independent neo-noir films, is that it has a very interesting mix of different subgenres. So you do have crime and thriller, but you also throw in a little bit of action and also a bit of dark comedy and satire in there as well. What was it like when it came to not only just writing the script, but also filming it to create a consistent tone throughout? Because I know with some other films, like, it can be a little bit jarring, but I think you guys find a good balance with having all these different types of subgenres and mixing it together so it does feel consistent. What was it? So what did you guys had to do to make sure you create a tone that felt very, like I said, specific and consistent throughout, but also make it sort of stand out compared to other similar films like this?
I think one of the main things, a lot of it just came in the writing, kind of naturally, how we were kind of writing at that point. I think naturally when we were doing a lot of the kind of like the writing back then, there was a lot of, I would say it wasn't really conscious, but I knew we were going to play with genre and we were going to play with tone. I think it was just, I liked the idea of just slowly maybe starting a story with a certain tone and then just slowly for it to start mutating into something else and then kind of keep on constantly evolving. And it was a little bit of a challenge, and a lot of it just came about during the script writing, but also when we were shooting, we really kind of, there were certain beats that we kind of really leaned into and played into, especially when we're kind of, I think one of the things that kind of helped out with that is because we shot for a long time. This was not like a 4 week shoot. I think like really maybe a year and a half of like constant filming in that sense. And in doing, and one of the things that really helped with the tone, with kind of like the morphing tone of it, was actually as we were shooting, I was actually editing the film and I could kind of see like, all right, this is where it's going. This is where we can kind of take a left turn here and a right turn here. I think it would have been a little bit more difficult if we just shot the whole thing in a month and we were done with it. By doing it that way, of shooting kind of like in a very slow way and me editing it, I kind of found that, oh no, we can kind of take these little turns and kind of lean into these little aspects of it in regards to the certain genres of it. And what do you think, bro?
That's right. We wouldn't have dailies, but we would have like weeklies or bi-weeklies.
Yeah, we would. Yeah.
Edwin would bring over the cuts and I had a projector and a back. I set up like a theater in the back room at the house I was in at the time. And Edwin and I would go back there and watch these weeklies. And yeah, the thing, I'm not going to give away too much of the magic, but the thing is that Edwin and I make each other laugh. Like, that's what I love about Edwin, is that guy could make me laugh. And for whatever reason, I make him laugh. Exactly. Yeah, totally. And for whatever reason, I make him laugh. And we do write to entertain ourselves. And part of the way we show that we're entertained is to laugh. And we're not always laughing at funny things. We're laughing when we're happy or excited or whole lot. But to hear a laugh is what's important. So we would always, in the writing phase, like try to push each other. Like, oh, is a heightened line of dialogue going to make him laugh here? Or, oh, is it going to be another dumping on Dave, or is it going to be like a horrific scene? Like, I no spoilers for the movie, because please go watch our film Medias Res. It's on Prime in Australia, but yeah, there's some acts of violence in the movie that I find like really fucking funny, and I think that's what you mean by the dark comedy. But it's all in an effort to make each other laugh, and but it can't come at the expense of the characters. So it's like, if we're going to make Dave a loser, like make him a fucking loser. Like, how could we really hit the nail on the head that Dave's a loser? Or if we're going to make Joe abusive, let's make him like an abusive boyfriend. Like, let's put them in more of a domestic relationship, the way they talk about things. Or if we're going to show a saccharine kind of TV show that's overproduced, like we have to go hard and we have to make like the best episode of Dawson's Creek we could think of. Well, yeah, there's a lot of tones that shift in genres. That's a good question, Bede. Thank you.
I appreciate that. But also, too, I think another thing that I think is very strong about the film is, of course, the performances from the cast, including you, Delaney, as Dave. Knowing that you
including
were...
me?
Yes, including you.
I did a good job?
Yes.
I did good.
Well, I think you did a really good job, but I do want to talk about the character of Dave, because Dave is a very interesting character, and I think one of the things I find very interesting about him is, like, he is this guy who's kind of caught up in the situation, and knowing that he is in this kind of relationship with Joe, which makes total sense, being that you kind of see it as almost like this abusive relationship between Dave and Joe. But I guess my question for you, Delaney, is what was it when it came to playing the character of Dave? What preparation did you have to play this character?
Well, that's a great question, because on a personal level, I had a lot of preparation to play Dave. I mean, Dave is someone who is constantly trying to do the right thing. Even if he's not necessarily doing the right thing, he's getting caught up in his head about doing the right thing. He's trying to kind of live that, what would you call it, that American ideal, like that Protestant work ethic. Like, if I work hard and do the right thing, things will work out for me in the end. And there's a certain naivete to the way he approaches life. But he's got an estranged wife or an ex-wife, and he's got a baby. And I have both those things too. So it was a lot of finding Dave's sadness and trying to connect with his sadness. And a lot of that just came from me having to remember my struggles. Like, I've had to live in weird fucking places. I've slept in cars for weeks. I've lived in a plumber's closet for months. Like, I've taken odd jobs that I couldn't really, like, that would never pan out, like that promised everything but delivered nothing. And just, yeah, Dave's an interesting character, because, like, I have struggles with mental health, but Dave doesn't really seem to have those struggles. He kind of has these blinders on, for better or worse, that kind of just make him this machine that just keeps pushing through this bullshit that's happening to him. But yeah, by the time we catch up with him in medias res, yeah, we see where he goes when he's pushed to the limit.
Yeah, and I think where the character goes from the very beginning, right up until the end, we kind of see him on this journey that I find very compelling. Because you can definitely tell with a character like Dave, he is trying to make the best of a situation. And I guess some people could see that as being naive in some way, but you bring a lot of sympathetic qualities to the character where you're really on Dave's side, and you see that he is trying to be a good person and trying to do the right thing, but of course the circumstances around him kind of are putting him in these situations where he has to do things that he doesn't want to do. So I definitely think that's one of the things is compelling about the character, is seeing a person who is fundamentally a good person, but being pushed to the brink of having to do things that he knows that are not right. So I feel like in terms of what you guys do with the character, I think that's what makes him a very interesting character, because I do love stories like that.
Yeah, and the other thing I always responded to with Dave is that We don't make him like a film nerd or anything, but we do give him this one thing where he loves this one TV show. It's almost like his special interest is this one TV show. And he's out stealing cars with Joe one night, and they just happen to steal a car that has his special interest in the trunk. And it was always fun shooting those scenes, because where Dave is talking about how much he loves the TV show and da 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 when he's talking to Summer, because that's not unlike me, like, as far as loving TV or movies. Like, I share that with Dave completely. But yeah.
Yeah. So For the listeners, just to give a little bit more of a plot detail. So Dave, he really loves this show called Quintessential American in the film. He watches it. It's one of those teen soap operas, very similar to like the ones that we saw so much. It populated US TV. It was like Dawson's Creek. And they were always very saccharine. And they had a very kind of, they had a kind of naivete quality, like you said, Delaney. But they were like, almost kind of like, yeah, like in that sense, it was like a bubble in that regard. Like it was overly optimistic. And Dave as a character kind of latches on to that, that TV show in particular. I don't think it was so much in hindsight now that I don't know if it, in the writing of it or whatnot that we thought. I think it's just, it was more the show's message than the characters just saying like, look, if I do the right thing and I work hard, things automatically are going to work out in the end. In that sense, just having that kind of naive quality of it. Like I do the right thing. I work hard. It'll work out. It'll pan out. And it doesn't. Like that's not how life is in that sense. And it's, and I guess that's part of Dave being also kind of like a classic film noir fall guy too. There's kind of like a blind spot in his character that really kind of causes his kind of fate in the end, so to speak.
And also too, I think it's interesting with the scenes from Quintessential American who that appear throughout the film, it kind of contrasts what is happening within the world of this film, because Dave kind of sees this show as something that is very optimistic and has, and gives him the feeling that, you know, despite how things turn out, everything will be okay. But sometimes with certain scenes that are shown on the show, you kind of see characters in real dark moments, particularly one with the character of Summer towards the end of the film, which I won't spoil. But it's interesting kind of seeing, like, you see all these little dark moments, and it's almost in a way interesting that Dave kind of ignores some of those little moments and focuses more on the positives.
Yeah, he focuses on the message. He doesn't focus on the journey. He's focused on the message. But you're right. And those really, Quintessential American in the film, it does show a lot of dark moments for characters. And you're right, Bede, the one particularly at the end. So that's kind of, there's kind of a meta moment there where there's a character watching that darkness happen, and then their immediate reaction is to just laugh. So that's again how Edwin and I are kind of playing with it. Like we write these scenes that we think are so what am I trying to say here? It's like, because they would have these shows, like even like a Seventh Heaven or something. Do you watch these? You fuck with Seventh?
Oh, I'm very much aware of all these shows. I mean, some I did watch from beginning to end, like Dawson's Creek, but others I did see the odd episode here or there, like Seventh Heaven, or what was the Dawson's Creek spinoff that they made? Young Americans, I think it was called, from what I remember.
Which one?
I think it was called Young Americans. It was like a spin-off to Dawson's Creek, where it was they did the thing where they introduced a character on that show, and pretty much that character kind of spun off into their own show. I think it was called Young Americans. I'm gonna have
it was
to
like
look
a backdoor pilot.
Yeah, it was basically a backdoor pilot for this other show.
Yeah. Well,
Young Americans. I looked
shows,
it up there.
They do go into really dark.
Young American, okay. That's so interesting. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was canceled after one. It was canceled after one season. So,
even those saccharine, like really kind of sweet, like family shows, like Seventh Heaven, they would have those episodes where they're like, such and so's like a gang member, like stay away from that, or they'll be like, hey, you want to see this gun? Or those were the types of things like we would play with, and we would just like up the ante, bro. We just made it like taking it to the furthest level like we could think of, like that last scene with Summer.
I mean, we literally have a character, we literally have in the Quintessential American a character that plans to do a school shooting. Let's so speak of like pumping up the ante, so to speak, or turning up the ante.
Oh, yeah. But it's not, that's not in the movie, but it's to speak to the world building that Edward and I come up with. Yeah, we have like a whole, if HBO gave us money tomorrow, man, we would have an amazing year of television for you. We would just do Quintessential American.
Absolutely.
Actually, just I probably will cut this part out of the episode, but I'm just like looking up more on Young Americans because I'm curious. Because it came out in 2000.
You go for it.
It pretty much like, yeah, went for only one season. Kate Bosworth was one of the stars of the show, along with Ian Somerhalder, though. And
really?
Yeah. And it was created by the guy who played Troy in The Goonies.
That's crazy.
Wait, so, who's yes, Troy?
Oh, he was the bully, like of.
It's like the bad.
The one like who like the held Josh Brolin's bike.
Yes.
Yeah, the one who like held Josh Brolin's bike. Like,
yeah, and he also
it's like the bad. Like, yeah, exactly.
And he also like wrote and directed by Troy. Yes, and he also so wrote
Troy
and
at some point goes up to Kevin Williamson. And like Kevin Williamson's like, yo, Troy from Goonies is going to hold down this Kate Bosworth, Ian Somerhalder show.
Indeed. Now yes. That the film's in the can and you guys released your initial cut of the film around 2019, like sort of looking back on it now with this final cut and everything, like the almost 10-year long journey with this film from when you guys shot it, developed it, to releasing the final version of it. When you sort of look back over that time, like, what is something that you guys as filmmakers and creatives have learned the most from working on this film?
That's such a good question. Delaney, do you want to take that first? I'm going to think of this because go first on this because this is a good question. Let me think for a minute.
But on a personal level, I learned for myself, this is how I like to engage with art and this is how I like to make movies. And I like doing kind of these punk rock productions. I think they have a liveliness to them. We learned a lot about guerrilla filmmaking, in particular, shooting in public, shooting in the middle of the night, shooting around. Well, I already said in public, I was going to say other people, but shooting in other people's spaces in covert ways. And we learned so much. I mean, when Joe talks about the movie, he learns like how it was basically his film school. And I would go to second that same response. I mean, we learned how to make a movie. Like we did it from the bottom to the top. Like we had a conceptual idea for years in our heads of like what it would be like to make a movie, or we might have a certain expectation, but then when it came down to it, like we learned and completed a movie. But I think the biggest things I learned from it are just going to be what we're course correcting on the next one, because we're not going to stop shooting this way, because this gets us like the most organic results.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things is like we had to learn how to shoot a movie. For me, what I learned is how to shoot a movie in a very non-traditional way, because this was not like how you do a normal film production, in whether it be in LA or whatever, shooting this kind of guerrilla method. It was a new way of working, like Delaney said, with just filming and out and without permits in public. It was really, but at first it was very difficult. And I think at the end, when we finished filming this film, I was just like, I never want to do it again. But now I'm like, no, this is the way that I really want to go about doing it. That's the funny thing that came about from this. Like, this is actually a preferred method of mine now, or the way I would like to approach the film, the next film, versus the traditional way where we film with a large crew and film, you know, in a few weeks and then... No, I prefer the way that we started working with Medias Res. We actually tried to do like another film like that. It was called Late Night Seeker in 2019, but COVID happened and it shut down that production completely. And that footage kind of went into the can and into hard drives, but like, okay, cool. Yeah, so essentially it was after we kind of did Late Night Seekers, it was in Medias Res, it was just kind of like, no, this is like our preferred method of working now. That's one of the things I learned. Like, this is how I think we get the best out of the stories that we have. And we can kind of go about making the film without having to worry a lot about like, how are we going to be securing finances? locations, we can find ways to kind of work around that just by doing it with this kind of guerrilla method.
Oh, I was just going to piggyback on what Edwin said, because I don't know. I feel like a lot of people that make their independent film, they want to eventually get out of that and get to like crafty services and fucking play with C-47s on a big movie set or whatever. But Edwin and I really just want to control our own worlds and make our own things. So I don't know if I'm ever going to have a desire to be like, look for acceptance from like Hollywood or whatever. Cause to me, filmmaking, Hollywood's just one part of filmmaking, and the way they make movies out there is just one part. I mean, filmmaking is just filmmaking. If you make a film, you're a filmmaker. It doesn't matter if you're Matt Damon or Troy from fucking Goonies, like, or whatever level you're at. But if you're making movies, like, you're a filmmaker. And what's important to me is to just keep making movies. And those movies aren't always going to come out. I mean, sometimes they're going to be in my head, but part of it is just those reps of like, make as many movies as you can. And Edwin and I were lucky enough to realize, I mean, more than one movie, because we've done shorts and stuff like that too. And we've done other productions, but we're working on a new one now. And it's just like, keep making movies.
So in going off what Delaney said right there, I think one thing is when you're making a film, there's somewhat of a traditional template that you kind of follow. One of the things is we kind of discovered doing this production is you can adjust that template in regards to how you do the production, the pre-production, the shooting of it. It doesn't have to be the traditional. It being so that we were in Northern California, and Hollywood is always the way Hollywood did it, was since we were so close to LA and Hollywood, that kind of template of doing a movie in the way the studios do it was really kind of ingrained early on. And once we did Medias Res, we kind of discovered, no, we don't really have to follow that template and that kind of process. We can kind of make our own process and go about it our own kind of unique way. I think that's probably the most important thing I got, or one of the most important things I got from the production of Medias Res. We can make films on kind of like our own terms instead of kind of doing it the way it's been done by other people. In that sense, it's kind of customizing the way we go about production. So it kind of gets the best out of how we work, essentially.
And now that the film Medias Res is out there for the world, for everyone to see, what are you guys both working on right now, whether it be together or separately? Is there anything that you guys can divulge to the audience?
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, Delaney, do you want to go ahead on this one? We're plugging this one as well, because we'd like to come back in a couple of years and discuss this one with you, Bede. So.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. We're working on a film that is called Hard Way Out, and it's a very genre piece. It's going to be international. It spans a couple countries, many states, so it's going to have a scope again. But it's basically, I don't want to give away too much, Edwin, so I'll just say it's going to be a gnarly home invasion movie.
That's perfect. And it's going to be, we're actually going to lean much stronger into kind of like the genre aspect, so it's going to be a straight thriller horror film. And I'm excited about this one. We're actually going to be filming it in my home, and where I'm originally from, in Puerto Rico, and then in California, as well as Georgia, where I'm currently at. So it's going to have some scope in it, and it's going to be, we're excited because it's going to be a straight up just genre movie. It's straight up thriller horror, and we've never really done one of those before. So I'm excited about that. And yeah, Delaney, is going to be, he's going to be one of our lead actors on this one as well. So mm-hmm. We're going to be bringing back Joseph Joe from the film. We're going to have a lot of the same actors from Medias Res making little appearances. I'll be actually on camera as well for the first time. So
yeah, actually in July, Joe signed on for it. So
yeah,
we're good to go. But also Edwin and I are going to be having a podcast coming out too. We've recorded several episodes for it. It's called A Minor Problem, and it looks at teenage like delinquency films or young adult films that are about teenagers in a wide spectrum. But our first episode, we're going to do Bully. And then I think we're going to look at all kinds, like good movies, bad movies, but anything to do with teenagers and filmmaking for them.
Yeah. So those are the two main things we have. The main one right now with Hard Way Out, we're right now in pre-production doing the writing of it. I'm going to be doing location scouting soon back home in Puerto Rico. And I'm going to go back a little bit later on to start scouting locations in California as well. We're going to be filming it in some of the same places that we film Medias Res, as well as some new ones like Oregon. And we've never really filmed in Atlanta, so that'll be exciting.
Well, I look forward to seeing that film once it's completed and released. And you guys are definitely more than welcome to come back on the show. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to. But even in the meantime, though, you guys are always more than welcome to come back anytime. I know, Delaney, you have been on this show or a couple of the shows on the Super Network throughout the year. Sure. So I'm
ready for more. The last one we did, we watched, what was it? The Michael Jai White movie, like Don't Mess With My Grandma?
Yes.
What was it called?
Don't Mess With Grandma, which was an episode of the Tubi Tuesdays podcast.
Yeah,
and that
yeah,
was
yeah.
a Don't very fun grandma. Episode.
That was a great one.
But I guess before we wrap up our interview today, guys, where if people want to follow your guys' work out there on the internet this week, where can people find you on the internet this week? Delaney, you first.
Honestly, I'm going to get personal here. And if anyone wants to contact me or if they're interested in me, my personal email is not.mike54@gmail.com. And I'm giving out my personal email because I'm not doing socials right now. And my plan is to build socials again. I used to have like a Twitter, an Instagram, but a Letterboxd, or I'm on Letterboxd. Just hit me up on Letterboxd. I think it's, I don't know what my handle is on Letterboxd, but just find me. But yeah, you can email me.
Fair warning, it's going to be all in Spanish. So I'd say probably if you want to get anybody, just use Delaney's email if for any comments or anything like that, if for any questions they might have on anything I've said or anything like that. But I think the main place to find us right now is just the Amazon link to the film. So it'd be amazing if anybody else wants to kind of keep on watching the movie. Now that we have it out there, we're going to have it out in several more platforms, but right now for any listeners in Australia, it's going to be on Amazon Prime, available in your territory. So,
or if you have, what is it called? Relay subscription service. That one's an international subscription service.
That's also an international.
We're also on there as well. So if you already have Relay, you could just find us there. And then we're also going to be on Fossum soon. Yeah. So probably in the next like week or two, we'll be on that service as well.
Well, I'll make sure to put all the links to the film in the show notes for this show, so all of the audience out there can check out the film on their streamer of choice. But thank you both, Delaney and Edwin, for coming on the Super Podcast to talk about Medias Res.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, brother.
You're welcome, guys. And if you want to follow me on any social media out there, you can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky under B. Jermaine, Letterboxd under B. Jermaine. You can find my work all on the website, supermarcy.com, and as well as the other awesome shows that we have on there besides the Super Podcast. But if you have been enjoying the Super Podcast and all the other shows on the Super Network, head to patreon.com/thesupernetwork, and just as little as $1 a month, you'll get early access to all episodes of this show and the other shows on the Super Network, including the exclusive video versions of the Tubi Tuesdays podcast. And also, if you want to listen to my solo show, Bean versus the Living Dead, you can follow that on all podcast streamers as well. So, yep, that is a wrap for this week's episode of the Super Podcast. We hope you all enjoyed it, and we'll see you all next time, everybody. See ya. Bye.
Get better, Marcy.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Okay, so it breaks down like this. Two cars stolen. One sold at $400. One sold at $50. You subtract the $300 spent on gas, plus all the money you spent on weed in 40s, and that leaves our final total at $28. We've made $28 in 2.5 weeks. Could have made more than that selling shit out of the trunk of my car.
If we want to take this operation to a new level, we have to go to a bigger and better place. A place like White Creek.
It's really great, Joe. White Creek's a nice place and all, but you know how many cops they got out there?
Do you know how many Beamers, Mercedes, and Benzitos those rich fucks got down there, too? We going to White Creek, motherfucker.
Yo, White Creek City, where the streets stay hushed. Mining town roots, history gets crushed. Plato local still serving beans and rice. But the Plaid House cold, gotta roll a load of dice.
Not at all. Suburbia still haunt us all.